Hey everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for taking a listen to this Corner Office podcast. Today, I am talking to Tom Wilson, the CEO of Allstate, the insurance company. You're in good hands and all that stuff. We talked about a bunch of things, self-driving cars and how that's going to upend pretty much everything. Our future, where extreme weather is the norm. Also, some tax reform. Here you go.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Tom Wilson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You have been the CEO of this company for 10-ish years now. It's been an interesting 10 years, both, first of all, in the economy and also in the insurance business. I wonder, how's business right about now for you?
Business is good for us right now. So our insurance businesses are all operating well and profitably, despite the fact that there's a lot more severe weather these days, a lot more disasters. And then the investment markets are good. So we have those two businesses. Our people are in good place. So our business is good. We've had some ups and downs over the last 11 years, as you point out.
I wonder, though, what it's like running a company, the insurance side of the company specifically, which is what most people know you for, where so much is truly out of your control, whether it's the behavior of people in this economy or things like weather and hurricanes.
Well, that's what we're built for, really, is to take that burden off of people. So we're here to protect them when bad things happen and help them rebuild their lives. And so for us, it happens in all across the country. So there's always a constant rhythm of it. It happens, of course, at an individual, like getting a car accident or a hurricane rips a roof off. It's a disaster for them. But we deal with that all year long, every day. And so it's part of what we do.
Sounds like you're just used to it, right?
We're used to it makes it sound like we don't really care that much. Each one's really important.
Fair enough.
And each disaster's bad. And so we care a lot, but we're good at it, I guess is what I would say.
What, I mean, with the understanding that you've been with this company for a good long while now, what is it about, I guess it's sort of the risk business, right? What is it about the risk business that's attractive to you as a CEO?
There's two parts to it. One, we play a vital role for people. So people can't assume the risk themselves. So if you have a car and you hurt somebody and it causes $10,000 worth of damage, you know, most people in America can't afford that. Most people don't have $400 to handle an emergency, so they need us there. And then it's all about people. The insurance business is all about people helping other people. We don't own any manufacturing plants. We don't have any patents, really, to speak of. We're just a bunch of people that come together every day. And when you do that, it makes you feel good when you help other people.
All right. So how come so many people probably really don't care for their insurance companies?
I think insurance has gotten away from its basics, which is just take care of you, protect you when bad things happen. And some of that's the contractual nature of it. Some of it's a low-involvement category. So people don't necessarily wake up every morning thinking, oh, you know, I try and decide whether I call my Allstate agent or I go to Starbucks. They go to Starbucks because it's a higher involvement category. Insurance needs to be there when bad things happen, but you don't really want to spend a lot of time thinking about a disaster when it's a normal day.
All right, let me throw a couple of phrases at you, get your gut-level reaction. The first one, obviously, given this season, has to be hurricanes.
Well, there's a lot more damage than hurricanes. So there's straight-line winds, there's wildfires, as you know, up in Napa. There's hail. So this weather has gotten a lot more severe over the last decade versus a couple of decades before that. And in America, we have a lot more stuff to protect. So these disasters happen continuously all throughout the year. We spend over several billion dollars a year helping people rebuild. And so it's all about the severe weather, and the weather is worse.
All right. Well, let me deviate then from my throwing a couple of things at you and dig into that one a little bit. You know, you're the guy or one of several guys and people who pays for our rebuilding in areas where we know bad things are going to happen, right? They're going to rebuild on mountainous areas and we're going to have fires there. We're going to rebuild on beaches and we know we're going to have floods and hurricanes there. Are we doing it wrong?
There's two parts to that. So first, there's the private
yes
market.
Yes and no.
Right?
No,
yeah. So in the private market, it works pretty well. I believe that the governments are not doing it well, particularly the federal government. So as you point out, you know, people have floods, same house floods three times in a row. People rebuild it three times in a row. And we're using taxpayers' money to redo that. Besides just floods, there's hurricanes where the federal government comes in and spends so much money. And then things like terrorism, people aren't covered at all, but businesses are. So really the federal government needs to think about this more holistically rather than just get in and when bad things happen, start helicoptering in and throwing all kinds of money out at people because it's politically expedient.
Well, so let's take Houston just for an example, where I know you probably lost a whole bunch of money in the flooding after Hurricane Harvey. Should the government be saying to people, you know what, you cannot build in that what is now a dried out reservoir, but when the rains come, you're going to be underwater?
Well, I think you can't do it immediately, right, because people built there and they built there under the rules that existed at the time. But I think what the federal government could do is say, over time, we're going to move to a different system. So if you're supposed to pay $500 for insurance and today you're paying $100, over the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to get you up to $500. If you shouldn't be there at all, then we're not going to let you rebuild. So we really need a multi-year plan to get ourselves out from where we built stuff, which's in harm's way.
Yeah. You're factoring, I imagine, the changing weather and climate into your business model, right, for the next generation or two?
Well, there's all kinds of changes impacting our business model, from technology to weather. But yes, we've been working on the weather stuff for over a decade.
All right. So here's another one that I'm going to throw at you then, given you just said technology. Self-driving cars. If I wreck my self-driving car, or my self-driving car wrecks itself, I guess, am I on the hook?
I think self-driving cars are just the tip of the iceberg, Kai. I think most people talk about them like it's all going to be there. What's really going to happen is a personal transportation system is going to change, and it needs a change. It is the single biggest economic opportunity facing America today. Hmm. We can, with a 20% improvement in personal transportation costs, we can improve household income by 5%. Per household. Every household will make a broad-based prosperity. It's $250 per month per household with a 20% improvement, completely doable today. So self-driving cars are part of that, but just better utilization of cars. If we use your phrase, let's do the numbers. $4 trillion in hardware, $2 trillion in direct costs, $1 trillion in indirect costs, and people use their cars, even at peak hours, 33% of the time. Everywhere I go, I see empty cars. And why do we spend all that money having empty cars? We need to figure out how to do that more efficiently. And that's one of the things we're working on.
All right. Well, with all respect, you didn't answer the question. If my self-driving car wrecks itself or drives into the next person's self-driving car, who's on the hook, man? Who's paying that?
In that case, it would be the manufacturer of the car.
All right. Boom. Have you talked to Ford and GM and Chrysler about this?
Yeah, they already have that liability today. So if, you know, if the steering wheel falls off, they're responsible for it. If the software in the car that runs the brakes goes off today, there's all kinds of technology in those cars today. So they have that liability today. I think the good news is we won't have 40,000 people dying every year. But that's not the only answer. It's not just self-driving cars.
You sound like you're excited about the opportunity, actually.
Oh, we think it's great. Anytime you can... If you think about Americans, and we talk about the love affair with a car,
yeah.
If you offer the average household $250 per month, most of them would ditch their car. This is, you know, half the households in America can't afford $400 for an emergency. This is big economic gains, and I think there's a way we're going to do it. We'll start sharing cars. We'll be using more ride sharing. There's just going to be a much different way in which we move around the world.
Let me turn the page here for a second to sort of a second gig that you have. You're the chairman of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We've had those folks on a couple of times in the last couple of months talking about some of the policy changes that are going on in Washington. I wonder how you see the chamber's role in the Trump administration's economic policies and where the chamber stands on that, because the folks we've talked to have not always been in favor of what's going on.
Well, maybe back up a little bit. So first, I believe that the U.S. Chamber is there to help business do what it does best, which is create prosperity. So, you know, we take iron rocks and we make steel skyscrapers. We take some molecules, a little chemistry, and some brain power and make life-saving drugs. That's what business does. Governments can't do that. Nonprofits can't do that. And so what the Chamber's role is to help us do that, create prosperity. Sometimes it's aligned with what the government wants to do. Sometimes it's not aligned with what the government wants to do. So, for example, today on free trade, basically the Chamber is keeping the whole NAFTA thing alive by working with Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. to try to move that to some answer. The chamber's in favor of other policies that the government is putting for. So it depends whether it aligns with our ability to help businesses do what they do best.
Let me ask a slightly different question then. What do you think, as the chairman of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, what do you think of the job the Trump administration is doing with the economy?
They haven't really gotten a lot done as it relates to legislation on the economy. What they have done a really good job on is getting rid of some regulations which are freeing up businesses. So the U.S. Chamber works with the state and local chambers, represents about 3 million businesses, and I've been in five different groups with state and local chambers, and small businesses love the fact that they have less regulation on them, and so they're investing more in the business. So that part's been very good. Legislatively, you can look at the record, there's not much been done.
As a guy running Allstate and also as the guy representing the chamber, how much are you banking on tax reform just in terms of economic growth in this economy and also for your own business?
Well, we think the taxes should be reformed. It's almost like built-up wax on a table. You remember that lemon pledge? There's just been too much wax built up, and so we got to clean it up. We need to make it more competitive internationally, in part because I think people just game the system today. They move locus of profits around the world to try to pay less tax, and we need to change that. We do think lower taxes will drive growth. But I don't think that's the end. I think that's chapter one. Chapter two has to be how do we do that and not burden our children with increased amounts of debts, which chapter three means how do we make sure that people get what they need, but that the entitlements don't run out of control.
Well, let me add a chapter four. How do you give corporations tax cuts, which you say corporations need to grow this economy, without burdening average middle class taxpayers, which is what it seems this tax bill does?
Well, this tax bill doesn't actually raise taxes for middle-income people. What it may do is create an increased deficit for the government. Then you get into, well, will it drive enough growth? I believe that, you know, no tax bill is going to solve all of our problems. We still need to go back and figure out how do we balance a budget, or at least not run as large a deficit as we will do. So there's more work to be done, but you got to do one thing at a time. You know, Washington is having a hard time getting one thing done, much less a comprehensive program that deals with all the things we got going.
What's Allstate going to do with the money it's going to save on its tax bill?
A couple of things. We're investing heavily in the connected car business, and we'll continue to invest in more amounts of money because of the tax reduction. I'm sure some of the money will go back to our shareholders in terms of extra profits and dividends, which then, of course, they'll invest somehow in the economy as well. So money's fungible. I mean, I think sometimes when people say, are you going to invest this dollar in taxes you save in a new plant, the economy doesn't work that way. Money moves around the economy. Less money in the government sector means more money in the private sector. And I think the private sector does a better job of managing money and getting a return on it than the public sector. So it's a good thing. We need to reduce taxes.
The White House Council of Economic Advisors says average family in this economy is going to get a $4,000 raise. You're going to give people a $4,000 raise?
Well, I think their math is over a 10-year period. I think, hard to speak for, is it related to automatic? We've already raised people's wages to $15 an hour about, I was 2 or 3 years ago, because I just thought, pay more money, get better people, works better for our business, and that's worked quite well. So we don't need to raise wages at this point. To the extent that there's increased growth and you got to compete for talent, you pay people more, of course you pay them more.
Has it gotten you what you want, better people, paying them more?
It has, yeah. Mm-hmm. Turnover's down, people are more motivated, happier. So, I was walking through one of our facilities and somebody said, they're having a hard time getting by on their medical costs. And I said, well, how much do they make? And they said, well, they were making like starting wages $12.50. And I'm like, well, we should just pay more. And we did it and it worked. This is not about making people do it. It's just about competing in the marketplace for good talent.
Tom Wilson, the CEO of Allstate. Mr. Wilson, thanks a lot for your time, sir.
Thank you, Kai.
All right, that's it for my conversation with Tom Wilson, the CEO of Allstate. One more interesting little tidbit that I learned, by the way, doing this. Allstate, originally a subsidiary of Sears and Roebuck. Go figure that one out. Anyway, thanks for listening and for leaving us your comments on Apple Podcasts. Whether you love us or hate us, tell us how we're doing. Just be kind, would you? This episode of Corner Office was produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Star Nieves is the executive director of On Demand, which is a fancy bureaucratic way of saying podcast. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you next time.